The following is a true story, except for the ending, which just hasn't happened yet. This is Escape from Provo Canyon.
Months have passed, and these are teenage months. Like, four of these barely make up like a dog year. And, you know, I've been rolling my boulder up the mountain, trying to get in on the whole, you know, Camus Sisyphus thing. Like, every day just going with the program, you know, trying to love the slope. And today, I stand on the summit, surveying today's slope.
Remember when I first entered Provo, I passed this weird, like, U-shaped object that was all covered in snow. Well, I'm on it. It's springtime, and so it's no longer covered in snow. It turns out, like, it's like a half pipe. So as, like, a reward for, like, loving the slope, I'm being drip-fed all my old possessions, you know? My tapes, my boombox, you know, a pair of drumsticks, and my old skateboard. I used to ride a Santa Cruz street skate, independent 131 trucks, Kryptonic wheels, the conical ones. That was cutting edge back then. But yeah, this half pipe, like, it's a pathetic excuse. You know, having built one, you know, with me and my friends, I like to think I know a thing or two about ramps. So, like, ramps built by skaters, you know, they're going to have vertical, but you're also going to build in some, like, flat to ease the transition up the other side. Now, who the fuck knows who built Provo's half-pipe, but it sure wasn't a fucking tribe of skaters. To start, it was, like, painted Kelly green, you know, like a barn for a horse, and it was lacquered, which makes it, like, insanely slippery, you know, and it was, like, this Times New Roman U, like, 3 feet of transition, and then it's another five of just straight vert, and, like, zero flat, you know, like who'd build something like that? Like, there's no way you can grind the top. Maybe if you're, like, Steve Caballero or, like, Dwayne Peters or something. But, I mean, this thing's like a death wish manifest. And so, being the ever-intrepid idiot, you know, I drop in. And instantly, my board farts out, and I fucking slam and bust a front tooth. But there was an upside. You know, that gets me a nice little field trip to a Provo dentist. And I remember the guy's assistant, she's this, like, bodacious, like, buxom lass. Probably grew up on a fucking, like, local dairy farm or something. I don't know. Not bad looking, but she had these ginormous full dairy farm boobs that she kept rubbing inadvertently on my leg. Brought a little chub, and it was like poor man's second base, but hey, beats having Tommy, you know, thwacking his dong at you in the fucking showers. So, like, Friday nights, you know, they'd line us up and march us into the dining hall for snack time. And if you had a care package, they'd give it to you, and you could share it or not. And there was also in the corner, there was this little kiosk that sold, you know, Reese's Pieces, Butterfingers, RC Cola, the candy shop.
I'll take you to the candy shop.
That's my producer, Justin. I love this guy. And so, everyone had an allowance.
Court order, somehow an allowance, maybe through the state, I don't know. And in, like, my case, back when I was in Unit 1, my dad would seed my account for just enough for, like, a Three Musketeer bar or something. But as I moved up through the units, you know, he'd adjust my snack allowance to be commensurate with my new attitude, which feels, you know, transactional, as opposed to, you know, unconditional love, you know? It's like, make sure you read the fine print. But anyways, now I'm in Unit 6, you know, on the precipice of going hotel, so share the wealth. Like a typical Friday night, you know, there we all are. Tommy, Rufus, Wheeze, partying hard on a box of Goobers or Junior Mints. How far I'd fallen, you know? I mean, Friday nights used to be like, dude, my fucking band's playing so-and-so's kegger. Everyone's showing up. I'm going to slam some beer, smoke some clove, and try to make out with that cute freshman who just got her braces off. And now it's like, hey, Tommy, I dare you to munch, like, two packs of Pop Rocks and slam a Pepsi. So I'm in Tubbs's cubbyhole, you know, for our bi-monthly hang session or, like, drop-in or whatever the fuck he tried to call it. And so there I am, you know, like, presenting my melon. Ready for shrinkage, sir. But instead of suffering through his like lame attempts at psychotherapy, I mean, it's not like I'm impervious. Like, I'm not Irish. I'm actually Scottish. It's really more like, you know, Tubbs, he's powerless. But today, you know, the dude blindsides me. He's like, why don't you go change into your gym shorts? We're going to go play tennis with your dad. So, yeah, before I know it, I'm in an indoor tennis court giving my dad, like, a hug. I mean, it was the world's most awkward, contrived, sideways, sidelong, like, inappropriate hug of all time. You know, I've prepared a character, you know, a jow for my dad. I've, like, game theory this out enough to forego any screaming, which is what I really want to do. Like, where's that going to get me? I just pretend everything's hunky-dory, you know? You're like, Dad, no way. This is amazing. What a surprise. And there's like a little part of me that's like coddling this fantasy that if I lick his ass just so, maybe, you know, he'll like call everything off and I could just leave with him and go back home. So there we are in this strange embrace. And I can tell he doesn't really know how to respond to me. You know, he does manage like an attaboy punch to the shoulder, which cuts the small talk sort of right there and then. And so, you know, it's my serve. Now, my dad, he's a phenomenal athlete. Great hand-eye coordination, sense of flow. Like, he gets in the zone. And he had this, like, standing bet with me, Wow, and Bao that if any of us kids could beat him in tennis, he'd sign over the pink slip to, like, whatever car he was driving. And he always drove nice cars. But, yeah, none of us could ever beat him. But that day, I gave him a fucking run for his money, I must admit. It must have been like all the pent-up anger inside of me or something, but yeah, I aced him three fucking times. It was just like supremely like satisfying to see him scramble off his mark and like reaching for the ball that just passes him by. But yeah, Dad's a fighter, he's a counterpuncher, and he come right back with, you know, this savage backhand down the line. And now it's me scrambling, you know, but I manage an amazing return. Slap, the ball hits the white tape and pops back on my side. Game, set, match. And then the gloating, which normally made me want to puke, but by now, you know, I'm so used to it being a loser, it's easy to stomach. So yeah, we go back to the hotel. It's the one run by the school, by the way. Chet is working the reception and gives my dad his room key, which is kind of weird. Up in the room, he's going on about having flown solo to Provo and how it's a really tricky approach. And I'm like, yeah, you know, those mountains look pretty gnarly. Is it okay if I take a shower? And he's like, sure. And, you know, aside from being, you know, a sweaty mess, like, all I really want to do is get in there and have, like, an imaginary date with the dairy farm chick. Back in the room with my dad, you know, my cheeks start to hurt from fucking smiling so much. You know, fucking hairy palms and shit. We had dinner at the restaurant in the hotel, and then all of a sudden, you know, there's the grimace. Time to go back to Provo. So I don't sleep at the hotel with my dad. I sleep back in Unit 3. The next morning, I get to come out and have breakfast with my dad, but then it was time for him to take off. You know, I give him another hug, you know, this time like pressing harder into his like barrel chest, like hoping somehow he might take pity on his baby boy. And all of a sudden I'm like begging. I'm like, Dad, like, please, can I just go with you? But all I got back was like a stilted squeeze. He just never had an idea of how to be affectionate with me. But I don't blame him. I mean, he had a tough upbringing. Dude grew up on a farm in Ohio, you know, taking a shit in an outhouse. One room high school with a graduating class of like 15 or something. And he came from all that, all the way to practicing heart surgery at like the highest level in California. So he's a real self-made guy. I remember him opening up once on like a rare occasion. And he told me that when he came back from Quezon, he did like 3 tours in Vietnam as a medic. One of which was a volunteer, like his medical school buddy's wife was having complications with a pregnancy, and Dad went in his place. But so anyways, when he came back, his mom like shook his hand. His mom, Grandma, she grew up in the Great Depression, so there was never a hug. It was always like a handshake. And imagine that. I don't know. It's like a different era. That night back in my unit, I frantically scratch out a letter to my mom. Dear Mom, hope you are well. Are you sure there isn't any way you can get me the hell out of here? And poor mom, you know, she writes back and she's all, you know,
I understand this must be difficult for you, but I gave Dad custody because I didn't know how to handle you.
Of course, this was not what I wanted to hear, but looking back on it now, like anyone else, she was probably going through her own stuff. Single mom, raising three kids, two off at college, and Zhao, the uninhibited one.
Uninhibited.
That's the word she used to put like a, you know, a gracious spin on me fucking draining the swimming pool and throwing ragers. But yeah, you know, she had started dating. It was probably wondering, you know, what's next in her life, you know? My report card comes, straight A's. And that gets me my drum set. I can't believe it. A note from my dad simply reads like, keep hitting the books. You can keep hitting those drums. And so in the evenings, instead of snack time at Cafe Cynique, you know, the fucking Grimace, he takes me down to the auditorium where he leaves me alone. For like 2 hours, like I'm unsupervised, like I'm allowed to just play my drums, which is like an exorbitant privilege. I don't know how my dad lobbied to work it, but he could be pretty fucking charismatic guy when he wants to be. You know, I'd put on my Walkman and play along to Synchronicity by the Police, you know, and close my eyes and pretend that, you know, I'm Stuart Copeland in front of, you know, 80,000 people at the Oakland Coliseum. I was at that show. Day in the Green, 1983. Thompson Twins, Oingo Boingo, Madness, The Fix, and then the Mighty Police. My Saratoga Tribe, all of us, fucking right up front. Like, it was amazing. Yeah, that was back in September. Back before I just had to cut class to hang with Matt, you know? Back before I was taken. Back before everything just became so fucked up all the time. So by now it's like summertime. I've moved up all the way to Unit 6. Next stop is hotel. The Grimace, like, he set up a softball tournament. All the units and like their respective goons are going to compete against each other for like, you know, a pizza and ice cream night or some shit. My unit, Unit 6, we end up in the finals against Grimace and his hotel fucks. So we're all tied, bottom of the ninth, one away, and the winning run's like on second. I'm in deep right field, and Tommy, he's covering home plate. And like way out in left field, we got Daryl. The Grimace dragged in Daryl like a week after Rufio. And he was young, like 14, but like a full-on like firecracker. Like, it didn't take much to like set him off. Land on his piece in Candyland, and he'd be, like, throwing hands. But when the goons would pile on to restrain him, you know, whereas other kids would just submit, Daryl, he'd just keep going. Like, he wouldn't give up. And they'd throw him in solitary. And this happened, like, more than a few times. And then the Grimace started forcing meds on him, and these pills would just fucking knock him out, like comatose. It was sad. And, but he and I, you know, we moved up through the units together. You know, I wouldn't say we were good friends. I mean, like, Daryl never really interacted much with anybody. But we all, you know, just sort of accepted him, you know. He was cool. So anyways, you know, here we are, bottom of the ninth, winning run on second, and Chet's up to bat. The Grimace, he's pitching. Each team, like, pitches to itself. And so, like, the Grimace just serves him up just a gift of a pitch. And Chet just fucking rips it deep into left field. And comatose Daryl, you know, the kid who's hardly moved off the couch since intake, he takes off running and he fucking catches it. And all of a sudden, like, the runner on second, he tags up and takes off. And Daryl's kind of sitting there, doesn't really know what to do. And everyone's like, oh, yeah, you know, fucking. And the runner's rounding third. And then all of a sudden, fucking Daryl just rips a heater, like, streaks over my head. You know, you hear it smack into Tommy's mitt at home plate. The runner plows into Tommy, and there's a big dust up, and Tommy emerges with the ball, like, ice cream coned in his mitt. It's like, you know, you are fucking out. It was like a huge win. You know, scrappy Unit 6 has thwarted the Grimace and Chet and all the rest of the hotel fucks. Chet and his gang, they can have pizza and ice cream anytime, but not this time. You know, you're fucking out. Oh, so good. Yeah, but, you know, guess who probably skips the batting line? You know, it's the fucking Grimace. Now, he comes up to bat. Chet, this time, now serves him up, of course, a gift of a pitch, which he hits so hard, you know, it goes, like, way over my head and lands in this field on the other side of the fence.
And so you remember, like the fence at Provo, it's like 9-something feet with like razor wire on the top. But it's like a chain link fence, so you can see through it. And, you know, there's the ball sitting there in this grassy field, you know, only about 10 to 15 feet from me. So the Grimace, you know, he jogs around second, third, you know, taps on home plate, you know, yay, hotel whims.
Pizza, pizza party.
And everyone starts packing up. But me, I'm like staring at the ball, you know. It's like somebody's got to go over and go and get it. But it's out of bounds. I mean, I could probably scale the fence, but I don't, you know, I won't dare. You know, I remember growing up, we had Chum, this little like rambunctious like Shetland pony. Chum, and he lived in a corral next to our house in Del Mar, which in the 70s was this, you know, little sleepy Southern California beach town with like a thoroughbred racing track started by like Bing Crosby and Jimmy Durante, actually. And I remember some of the boards on the fence were like rotten, so my dad knocked them out so he could replace them. My sister Bao and I, you know, we were worried like Chum was going to wander away. But my dad's like, you know, chill. He was like, Chum's not going anywhere. Chum's going to stay put. And growing up on a farm himself, like dad, he knew that Chum, even though there was a gap in the fence, Chum had been like psychologically conditioned to believe the fence was permanent and like impassable. And he was right. You know, Chum stayed put, you know. He didn't escape, though he easily could have. And it never entered in his little pony mind. And so, like Chum, like, there I am, like, there's the ball. Like, I can see it. It's right there. But that's outside of my little corral. I can't go out there. That's where my world ends. So after the game, you know, I'm in Tubbs cubbyhole, you know, debriefing him on the game, you know. Like, you won't believe it, man. Like, Dale just came to life, you know? Ah, but then, you know, the Grimace skipped the batting line. And so, yeah, then, you know, I start tripping out about the ball just lying there out of bounds. And like, Tubbs, like, he's more interested in his tuna sandwich than, like, my musings. And, you know, if I was a therapist, I'd be interested. Like, let's explore what's going on in Jow's mind. But no, Tubbs, you know, he can't be bothered. Instead, out of the blue, he's like, well, bud, you made hotel and you're moving out after you get back from your home visit. And, like, I'm just blindsided. It's like I've just thrown all sixes, you know, fucking Yahtzee. I mean, it's normal for kids who have been, like, going with the program to get a home visit. And I've been getting, like, the attaboys for a while now. But still, I mean, I was so used to losing. I just couldn't believe it. I mean, it's like I've made Eagle Scout. And then I think twice, and I'm like, a home visit? Like, am I really going home? Like, am I going to Saratoga, back to the sound room, back to the skate ramp, to laugh with, like, with Matt and all my friends? It's like, no. Mom sold the house. The ramp's torn down. And you can forget about seeing any of your friends. No, I'm not going home. Not to Saratoga. I'm going to Santa Rosa. I'm going to my dad's house. This isn't a home visit. It's more of a, like, a house call. Now, right around this time, the Grimace, he was going through a bit of a rough patch. Nobody liked the Grimace. Like, the goons didn't even like the Grimace. I don't even think the Grimace liked the Grimace.
Okay, first skipping the batting line and winning for hotel was like, that was a dick maneuver. But in general, like, as of lately, he's just been coming down harder, sending people down to investment for, like, petty shit, like accidental swearing. That would typically just get you, like, a verbal warning. But yeah, he was just tossing ips out like candy. And I also remember two kids beefed, got split up, and pretty much cooled down. Nothing major. But the Grimace, like, threw them both in solitary, which is totally fucking overkill. But then the final straw happened a couple days later. He fucked up Daryl's meds. It probably just forgot or something. But, you know, Daryl wigged out. He started arguing with the goon. And, you know, the Grimace comes on to, you know, subdue him. But, you know, Daryl's not having it. And a tussle breaks out. Daryl's flailing about and accidentally cuffs the Grimace, like, in the ear. And that fucking does it. The Grimace just, like, fucking picks him up, you know, slams him into the ground and pile drives him up against a wall. It's like fucking way too aggressive. I mean, like he lost control. So, yeah, I mean, the Grimace, like, he sent Daryl to the fucking hospital. I mean, it turns out it was just, like, a cracked rib, so he was back that evening. But still, you know, I mean, like, school morale just fucking tanked. And not just the kids, but, like, the goons as well. You know, I mean, like you're the Grimace. Like, the buck stops with you. He's the ultimate supervisor. He's got, like, custody via proxy from, like, the parents or, like, in Daryl's case, you know, the courts. And with all that, you know, comes power, but responsibility. You fuck up a kid because you fucked up his meds, it's like, okay, you know, shit happens. But, I mean, you crack a kid's ribs? Like, dude, what are you fucking doing? Daryl's, like, 14, like, 140 pounds, and you're just full-blown, like, Grimace adult, like, 200-something pound, tear-shaped purple Grimace. Landing on a kid. Like, what do you fucking think is gonna happen? You know, you're not Hulk Hogan. This isn't the World Wrestling Federation. So yeah, school morale tanked. Not amongst us, like, inmates. At Provo Canyon, there is no such thing as, like, school morale amongst us inmates. But yeah, amongst the staff, you could tell a lot of them were, like, you know, wondering about this guy. But when Warren quit, that really did it. Warren was one of the therapists. He was the cool therapist. First off, he was young, like in his early 30s. And, you know, unlike the others, you know, he treated us all, you know, like regular people. No put on voices or, like, you know, kind of clumsy slang. Warren was, like, straight up genuine. And he took, like, a genuine interest in each of us as individuals, you know, our personalities, you know, our psychology. You considered yourself lucky to have Warren as a therapist. And for, like, the unlucky ones like me, you know, who were assigned to a Tubbs or some other burnout, Warren, you know, he talked to us as well. Warren was a good dude, you know, loved by all. But he was not down with the Grimace, you know, riding roughshod over Daryl. And he told him so. It all went down in Cafe Cynique during snacks. Warren, like, fucking laid into the Grimace, like, in front of all of us. And it was tight and it was righteous. So, yeah, you know, the next day, Warren quit. I mean, the Grimace, you know, he became like a pariah amongst us pariah. And so a few days later, you know, there I am in the Grimace's office presenting myself so he can go escort me to play my drums. And I can tell he's bumming. And I figure, you know, I'll try to relate to the guy somehow. And so I point to the photo on the wall. The one with him in the army fatigues. And I'm like, yeah, my dad did 3 tours in Vietnam. He's like a Navy surgeon attached to the Marines. Which branch of the military were you? And in an instant, I regret it. I can sense I've touched a nerve. And he's just not even looking at me. And then all of a sudden, he just starts muttering.
Army. Wanted to go Ranger. Discharge in BTC. Shin splints. Fucking ruck marches.
And inside, I'm like, whoa, the Grimace just said fuck. Like, that's 10 ips, dude. But at the same time, you know, I kind of put it all together. Like, I just caught a glimpse into, like, this dude's, like, wounded soul. All of a sudden, I know what's making him such a fucking asshole. You know, his dream, his personal ideal of being, like, an Army Ranger. His Army Ranger romance, that remains unrequited. And now he's just the Grimace, you know? A fucking babysitter of, like, society's teenage bad seeds. Where's the fucking dignity in that? Or the heroics? The poor guy, he's got the bitterness. I catch his eyes and there's like a strange sheepishness in a weird way, you know. I feel sorry for him. But that doesn't stop me from taking advantage. I'm like, oh man, you know, Army Rangers, you know, that sucks. Like, that's the dream. Or that's your dream, like, I can tell. Like, look at your office, you know, you got your map and, you know, it's all marked up and you got, you know, your walkie-talkie with your little thigh holster thing. It's like, yeah, I get it. And he's like, yeah. And I'm like, hey, I just want to tell you, like, I really appreciate you letting me play my drums like this. It really means a lot to me. And he just grunts. He's kind of like, you know, and I'm like, I don't know if you know, but like, I was supposed to play like a New Year's show the night that you and I met. And he just kind of grunts again, you know, like in the affirmative. And then we like sit there in this strange sort of silent solidarity, you know, for a second. And then I'm like, you know, the auditorium, like, that's a great space. Do you guys ever use that for anything? And he's like, nah, nah. And then I go in. I'm like, you know, I got a band here. We could totally play a show. Like, you know, with like everything that's gone on, you know, lately. Like, and I'm super careful not to try to blame him. Although, you know, it is his fucking fault. But then I just tell him, I'm like, it could be good. It could be good for you. And so the Grimace, you know, he's sitting there listening and like, I can't believe he's let me go on for this long. And then all of a sudden he's like, all right, I can't fucking believe it. The Grimace said yes, you know, like, I've just booked a show, fucking Provo Canyon. But I don't have a band. Well, not yet. So yeah, so I mean, I've got my drums, so there's that. And I got two friends. I got John Wood. He's this punk rocker from Ventura, who's got a guitar. And I got Bernie. He's this new waver dude from Orange County. Actually, he was more like a new romantic. You remember those guys? Into fashion and Duran Duran, Limel and Cage Goo Goo, that type of shit. And Bernie had a bass that he'd dick around on. He didn't really know how to play, but he looked cool. And you know, fuck it. So I meet up with John and Bernie, and like I tell them, I'm like, you guys are going to fucking believe this, but I'm leaving on a home visit this Saturday, and the Grimace has allowed my band to play, like a show for all of us here at Provo Canyon, in the auditorium. And they're like, no way, no way. And I'm like, yeah. What do you mean, your band from Saratoga, the Blue Beats? And I'm like, no, like, you guys. So the Grimace grants us like a single practice before the show. Somehow, like, amps were finagled. So John plugs in and just cranks it all the way up and starts in like a piranha, you know, just chainsaw bar chords. And I'm like, okay, I can work with that. I mean, you know me. I mean, I love the Police, like Stuart Copeland's my life, and he's like my dogma. But even in the early days, if you listen to them playing live, songs like Landlord, they're sawing away at like this breakneck speed. And I'm like, okay, we'll play like that. And then there's poor Bernie. You know, this is probably Bernie's first time ever plugging into an amp. He's just thumping along, pretty lost. And I'm like, you see the shapes on John's fretboard? Just try to follow along like with the dots on yours. You don't even need all the fingers. Just pretend like you're wearing like an oven mitt and follow the dots. So cobble together something that's just like super rough but ready. And it's Friday night and all the units 1 through 6 plus hotel, you know, they all file in. It's the first time the auditorium's ever even been full. John and Bernie and I were behind the big velvet curtain, bathed in 3 colored lights. And the Grimace goes out and he's behind this podium, center stage. And he's like, not announcing us, like, are you ready for the hottest band at Provo Canyon? You know, no, nothing like that. He's more like informing everybody, like, hey, we're doing like this special event for you all, without ever mentioning anything about like school morale or Daryl or anything related to that. But me and John, you know, we peer through the curtains and we can see like the place is full. The top aisle, it's like lined with goons, like Folsom Prison or something, you know.
What we've got here is failure to communicate.
But the atmosphere, it's just like fucking sweaty. Like seconds before like a summer rainstorm. And the kids are just super pent up. You remember when you were in grade school or junior high and you would see people who would be like bouncing their knees because they're just so pent up. Just like, imagine the whole place is just like that.
Every knee is bouncing. Everyone's just fully on edge. They're excited and aroused to see what's going to happen because, you know, Joe and John and Bernie, you know, they're going to jam out. What? Rock and roll? What the fuck? And, you know, at the same time, like, they want to boo the Grimace. I mean, like, a Rotten Tomato stand would have done some pretty brisk business that day. But so anyways, like, the curtains part, I just click us in.
1, 2, 3, 4.
It's, like, super fast punk style. And it's just loud. It's a ruckus. It's sloppy. It's fucking fun. John just takes off, like, skanking all over the stage. And for some reason, he took off his shoes and was just, like, in his socks. And the stage is based, like, shellacked laminated hardwood. So he's slipping and sliding all over the place, which is just a fucking crack up. Bernie's just sitting there, you know, thumping away with his pretend, you know, oven mitt, just trying to hit the root notes, of which he gets about half, which is fine. Me, I'm just blazing away as fast as I can, just making as much noise as possible, banging on every cymbal, you know, the bigger the better. And we're just thrashing out our little song, which is just, you know, like EAD. There's no vocals except for John out there, you know, prowling and growling. So we're thrashing away and those knees just keep bouncing and bouncing. We're playing harder and harder and they're bouncing harder and faster. And it's like a teapot, you know, whistling because the water's just starting to boil. It's like... And at that moment, the Grimace, like, he must have sensed something. And he just comes out backstage. He's like, okay, enough of that. Yeah, he shuts us down. And I mean, he let us go for a good, you know, like 2-3 minutes, you know, but now it's all over. The teapot just kind of dies down, you know. A catharsis was had. So, you know, the goons, like, line up the units, everyone counts off and files out, and yeah, I mean, that was it. But, you know, like, the next day at school, like, my little punk rock show, you know, it's Provo's Fête Célèbre. No way! You know, Joey Woods, Bernie, Rad, and, like, for the first time in a long time, I just felt cool as shit. So, today's the day, you know, I'm brought into the reception, and outside I see there's a black rental car, possibly the same one that brought me here 6 months ago. The Grimace, he's waiting, and he gives the goon, like, you know, a signal, you know, give us the room. And I can tell that he's back to his full-blown self. This is going to be like a warden-to-inmate chat. So he basically tells me, more like warns me, even though you're going home, all the rules here, they still apply. No smoking, no drinking, no swearing, blah, 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 blah. You're going to spend time with your father. You are not to connect with your friends. The underlying message is like, for the next 5 days, you might be gone, but I'm not. I'll be right there with you. You turn around and that's me watching you the entire trip. And if you get any wild ideas, like, I won't hesitate to drag your ass back here, just like I did on New Year's Eve. It's the total, like, De Niro and, like, Meet the Parents thing with the finger on the eyes. Like, you are mine. But, you know, I'm cool. I'm like, yeah, yeah, I get it. You know, I'm hotel. All the way. Pizza night. Eyes on the prize. So, a few hours later, you know, the Cessna lands in Santa Rosa. Same airport where we took off into the night, New Year's Eve. And my dad's waiting. I'm uncomfortable, you know, seeing him, but at the same time, just excited, just to be like on the outside, on the other side of the fence. The ride home, like to his house, you know, it's weird. Like, I'm doing all the talking, but I'm not really saying anything. Pulling up the driveway, it like brings me right back to that fateful eve. The surprise is like the fucking incredulity of being abducted. Like seeing my family waving and my mom in tears. Inside the house, I'm back on the couch, munching pizza and watching MTV. And I'm just like flooded with these feelings. Like, I don't know. It's, I can't describe it. It was like, this was the scene of the crime. These exact coordinates. This was the last place I was the old Joe.
Oh,
Next time on Escape from Provo Canyon.
I'm apprehensive and I'm really scared. But at the same time, I'm like exhilarated because it's Independence Day and I like believe 1,000% that what I'm about to do will ensure that I'll never ever be back at Provo ever again.